I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about how Indiana stacks up with the rest of the country regarding civic participation. We're going to dissect the findings of the 2017 Indiana Civic Health Index. My guests are retired Indiana Supreme Court Chief Justice Randall Shepard, Indiana Bar Foundation Executive Director Charles Dunlap, and Jeff Coates, Director of Research and Evaluation with the National Conference on Citizenship. Please join the conversation. Email us at nolimits@wfyi.org, find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking today about the 2017 Indiana Civic Health Index. It looks at a variety of sort of data points in regard to civic participation in the Hoosier State and how we stack up with the rest of the country. If you want to join this important conversation, you're going to have to do it through electronic means. We're having some problems with the phones today, so we're going to ask that you email us at nolimits@wfyi.org, find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are retired Indiana Supreme Court Chief Justice Randall Shepard, who served as one of the chairpersons of the assessment, Indiana Bar Foundation Executive Director Charles Dunlap, and the bar was a sponsor of the index, and Jeff Coates, Director of Research and Evaluation with the National Conference on Citizenship. Welcome to all of you.
Thank you.
Thank
Happy
you.
New Year.
Happy
Thank
New
you.
Year, everyone. And I should welcome the. This is our first live show of the year, so Happy New Year to the audience as well. So I'll start with you, Chief Justice Shepard. And could you give an overview of what the Civic Health Index is? We've done shows on this before, but you know, I've learned with students, you don't assume that they remember the material from the previous year, and I think we should hold audiences to about the same standard.
Well, happily, the Indiana Bar Foundation has been interested in trying to measure and evaluate over time the ways and levels at which Indiana participates in life with our fellow citizens. My co-chair, Representative Lee Hamilton, and I have been with the Bar Foundation and Chuck Dunlap now for three iterations of this. And as you say, it looks at a variety of ways that we interact with each other. Do we talk with our neighbors? Do we attend public meetings? Do we have confidence in public institutions? How is that measured? Do we vote or register? And how is all that compared to the rest of the country, of course, is what the citizenship staff that Jeff is a part of help us analyze. Most of this is based on analysis of periodic, regular surveys by the U.S. Census Bureau. Some of it, of course, is hardcore numbers like the voting and registration numbers.
And Chuck, what is it? What prompted the interest on the part of the Bar Foundation?
The Bar Foundation has one of its main core parts of our mission is civic education, understanding and appreciating the rule of law. And we have a variety of programs that we operate in that particular area, but one of the things that we really wanted to try to do was try to get a measure of where we are. How do we stand up in Indiana as compared to other states and other places, and break down the Indiana data to the extent we can, rural, urban, suburban, et cetera, and age groups and various other numbers and metrics. So these have been, as Chief Justice Shepard mentioned, this is the third iteration for Indiana of this report. And it provides a snapshot. And our hope is that as we continue to do this and gather data, we'll be able to get a picture of where we have been, where we are, areas that we can improve in potentially, and areas that we're pretty strong in. And there's several that Indiana performs very well in. So really, it goes with the overall mission and theme that the Barr Foundation has identified as one of our major areas of priority is civic education and helping to encourage appreciation for the rule of law and active, engaged citizens.
Jeff, how did in terms of doing the study, how were the data points, the things that were going to be studied and the information collected, what was the selection process regarding that?
This was can you hear me? I'm sorry.
Yes.
This was a process of about 10 years in which individuals such as Professor Robert Putnam and Peter Levine from Tufts University came together to think about how can you actually gather civic engagement data and make it robust enough to look at a community and say, this is what's happening in the community. And in 2009, Congress named NCOC part of the Edward M. Kennedy Serve America Act in collaboration with the Corporation for National Community Service to collect that data. So we have been doing this for about 10 years. And the questions, they have changed a little bit over the time, but pretty much for the last 10 years, the same questions have been asked to the population every year.
And what prompted the push at the national level to collect this data?
This was kind of at the early formation of the Corporation for National Community Service, which runs AmeriCorps and SeniorCorps. So this actually helped them to justify what they're doing, which they're doing great work. But it also, to a larger extent, the national government and at the national level, we wanted to know what is the civic health or the civic infrastructure of a community, and how does that change over time, and why is it important?
Well, and I think I'm going to switch the conversation over to Chuck and Chief Justice Shepherd. Now, with this information, we're going to dive into the numbers a little bit later and actually talk about the findings. I'm always fascinated. How do you hope, once you've gathered this information, that it will be used? Because it occurs to me this is an awful lot of work just to put something in a file and not have anyone look at it. I'll start with Chuck and then give Chief Justice Shepherd the last word.
Yeah, I think for our purposes, one of the things we want to do is bring awareness to the issue of civic health. You know, it's kind of a term that a lot of people don't necessarily understand when they first hear it or you know, what is exactly civic health. And in some ways, it's a challenge to measure. Some of the things are survey, and we talked about that. I think from the Barr Foundation's perspective, it's a big sort of project to move things like this in how it impacts communities and people and their active involvement. But that's ultimately the goal, is to be able to spotlight, here's how Indiana compares, here's what are some of the things that we do that really help form and shape civic life in Indiana. And we're not necessarily trying to take an advanced policy changes or, you see voting in here quite a bit. It's obviously a very concrete number. Some of it's more harder sort of, a metric than some of the other ones maybe because it's actual real data. But we want to show that we think that we can do better in that particular area given where we are. If you look at the report, there aren't specific policy proposals, but we want policymakers to see this, understand it, see where Indiana is, and potentially look at policy changes that could impact in a positive way a lot of these metrics. And so that's one of the things, is to get the word out about this report, what it shows, again, areas of strengths and weaknesses, and have conversations about how we might be able to improve a lot of these things and some of the correlations we've seen. And again, we'll get to the numbers probably a little bit later, but mm-hmm. the role of education is throughout a lot of this. There's a lot of economic factors that relate and various other things that correlate to civic health. So those are the kind of things that we're trying to spotlight and have conversations about in order to improve a lot of those things.
Mm-hmm. Chief Justice Shepherd.
Yes, well, one of the things we do have done on each of the three occasions is to convene meetings in different parts of Indiana of people who are interested in civic life and volunteerism and political activity. And for instance, most recently we had a meeting in Fort Wayne. We spent part of the morning at the university and over lunch convened a group of perhaps 25 people from the community leaders. Some of them were elected officials. There were some school board members. There were people from the newspapers. Mm-hmm. And we walked through this data. And when we were done, one of the I think it was a school board member, put up her hand and said, you know, I have some ideas as a result of this, and let's reconvene again, mm-hmm. And talk about what each of us might contribute to improving this community's participation. So that's kind of a classic hope for. You mm-hmm. get people together who are interested and concerned about these matters. We've done that in Evansville twice. We've done it here in Indianapolis two or maybe all three times. And it attracts a really interesting collection of active people mm-hmm. Who listen to it. And as in this Fort Wayne case said, I got some ideas. Let's see what we can do in Fort Wayne to improve the community's level of activity.
We are talking about the 2017 Indiana Civic Health Index. Call it the 2017, even though it's only been out for a couple of months, actually, just a few weeks. It came at the end of the year. We're not able to take phone calls today for technical reasons, but if you want to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, which our regular listener Jerry has done, or you can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or you can track us down on Twitter at wfyi. Again, the email address is nolimits@wfyi.org. Jerry writes, I am deeply concerned about the failure of many Hoosiers to accept the full responsibilities of citizenship, which, in addition to obeying the laws, includes serving impartially on juries and being an informed, he puts informed in uppercase, voter. I find the ignorance of American history and our Constitution especially disturbing. What specifically must be done to remedy these shortcomings? First, I'll throw this one to Jeff first. Are those things the knowledge of American history and constitutional law, or at least basic structure of our government and the operating rules of our society, is that something this study measures?
No, unfortunately, it doesn't measure that. But we do see trends. Mm-hmm. And I think Indiana is not the only one that's suffering. I think every state actually is. I think, unfortunately, we don't have a very robust civic education in our middle schools and high schools any longer. Mm-hmm. I mean, as for myself, growing up, we learned that stuff. We learned our responsibilities as a citizen. This study doesn't capture that stuff. What we do try to capture is more of the informal roles that citizens play with working with their neighbors to solve a problem or giving to charity, stuff like that.
Well, we'll take the second part, or I guess it's actually the first part. What could be done about this? Is there anything that comes
I'll
out?
I'll give a couple of examples, and I know Chuck will have some to mention as well. Just in the field where I've spent my career, the Indiana Supreme Court has done a number of things on the very points raised by the questioner. In jury duty, for example, there's been an utter transformation of how juries are selected, how they're summoned, And the, frankly, over time, the turnout in Indiana for jury service has improved rather dramatically, and the diversity of people who show up has changed very favorably. And the kinds of things we give to people, one of my favorite projects was called the Plain English Jury Instructions. How do we tell people the rules of law that apply to the case they're about to hear in ways that aren't full of legalese? And that's been a dramatic change.
Taking it out of the Latin, right?
You bet. The other thing that the Indiana Supreme Court has done is to create programs aimed at schools to make it easier for current data, new information. There's a whole collection of programs that the courts sponsor in order to improve the availability of tools that local schools can use to help teach students about these sort of things. And, of course, it's only a part of a broader scheme. The Bar Foundation is very active in this area.
We are talking about the civic health of Indiana on No Limits today. My guests are former Indiana Supreme Court Chief Justice Randall Shepard, Chuck Dunlap of the Indiana Bar Foundation, and Jeff Coates of the National Conference on Citizenship. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today about the 2017 Indiana Civic Health Index, which measures all sorts of ways that we interact with each other as a community, as a self-governing society. If you want to join the conversation, you can do so by sending us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. finding us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI, or tracking us down on Twitter at WFYI. We're not able to take calls today. We're having some technical issues with the phone system, but we hope you will use one of those other avenues to join this important conversation. My guests are retired Indiana Supreme Court Chief Justice Randall Shepard, who served as a chair of the assessment, Indiana Bar Foundation Executive Director Chuck Dunlap. The Bar Foundation was a sponsor of the index and basically helped make it possible by underwriting it. And Jeff Coates, Director of Research and Evaluation with the National Conference on Citizenship. So we've talked about sort of the purposes this goes to. We're going to dive into the numbers right now and take a look at what sort of snapshot did emerge from all of this. Jeff, I'll start with you on that. What did you see in looking at these numbers? What were the ones that popped out for you?
Yeah, what I saw looking at actually all three reports was that Indiana has made a strong effort to increase the civic engagement overall. I think that is something that needs to be highlighted and praised by those that have been participating in this report over the last 3 years. Another thing that I've seen is that Hoosiers, are ranked quite high in how often they hear from family and friends. Mm-hmm. That is the backbone of social capital, and I think that's really important. You know, things that we have seen at NCOC over the last 10 years is that communities with strong indicators of civic health, as measured by the Civic Health Index, have higher unemployment rates, stronger schools, better physical health, and are in a more responsive government. And I think Indiana has made strong strides in improving their civic health over the last three reports.
How about you, Chuck? What popped out for you?
One of the things, and this kind of goes to the point we were talking about before the break, was mm-hmm. the strong correlation between education mm-hmm. and levels of education that come through in the report and participation, certainly in voting, is one of the main areas. And there's a lot of things and reasons probably behind that, but the stronger education levels clearly do bear a striking impact in the results and increased civic participation across the board, really. And so that's one of the takeaways that we, I know certainly from the Barr Foundation and our civic education programming, sort of focuses our efforts to redouble our efforts and continue in those areas, because we think that that particular investment really does move the needle on this overall issue.
Chief Justice Shepherd, what popped out for you?
Well, I want to second that point. I think our state's leaders are very active on this front. Mm-hmm. What do we do to make better investments and better education available? Indiana is one of five states, for example, that increased spending per student in higher ed during the Great Recession, a matter of tremendous pride that's having some effect. And certainly will show up in this data. One of the things that caught my eye in this this year's version is that the level of registration and voting activity is best and better among relatively young people, mm-hmm. so that the number of people signing up and the number of people voting who are older, they're traditionally good turnout mm-hmm. type voters, has been either stable or maybe declining slightly. But a nice, solid increases among people who are 25 years old, 30 years old, 35 years old. And I think you have to treat that as an optimistic point of view for the future.
We got an email question from a listener named Chad and again, our email address is nolimitswfyi.org, that speaks to the voting question. He says, I'm amazed about the number of individuals who do not vote or are even registered to vote and the importance of voting. Many have no idea what Congress or a local mayor, city council does, or how those bodies even vote. What are some ways to increase civic education in local communities? Is civics still taught in school, or has it been abolished along with handwriting? I know Jeff spoke to the relative dearth of civics education in schools, not just in Indiana, but across the country now. I'll start with Chief Justice Shepherd on that one. Are there ways that that we can drive home the importance, not just of voting, but of understanding how these institutions work?
Well, start with the notion that, I too have heard it said that there's less and less history and mm-hmm. political teaching in the secondary schools. I've never seen any actual data on that. It seems to be largely accepted, but I'm not sure I accept it. I don't really have a basis for knowing whether that's true mm-hmm. or not true. One small counterindication is the one I just mm-hmm. mentioned, which yeah. is that that people who've never graduated from high school, happily a smaller group all the time, participates the least, and that the people who are who graduated with a diploma or had some college, you just walk right up through the possibilities of education, and you get a higher level of participation. Now, do they know enough? Count me a skeptic. I mean, mm-hmm. who says whether they know enough? They think they do. Mm-hmm. And so I challenge our questioner on the notion that the rest of the world doesn't understand it, only a few of us do. I'm not sure that's right.
Well, and I'm fascinated, and we'll talk a bit about the voting numbers because we've gotten a couple of questions in regard to that. One of the things I noticed when I looked at the report is that overall, obviously, voter participation, not just in Indiana, but across the country, seems to be lower than it was, say, 40 years ago. But one of the weird things I noticed in looking at that is that even though both numbers are lower, 40 years ago, Indiana voter participation rates were above the national average. Now they're below the national average. And again, I mean, it's not like any place in the country seems to be able to brag about this. It's a problem we've got across the board. But I wonder, you know, in diving into this, have we been able to figure out, Jeff, what might account for that slight flip? And I should say, in the 1970s, we weren't that far above the national average, and we're not that far below it. But still, it's an inversion that's curious.
Sure, and I actually do think it comes down to age. You know, that was, you know, a time in the United States where people were very politically engaged in a lot of ways. I think those individuals, now that they've grown up and are now 60s, 70s, you see that they still kind of have the same decently high voting turnout, high in the 60s. I think, though, yes, it's surprising and nice to see that, as Chief Justice said, that some that young people are now registered and are voting. I don't think it's at the same level as it was 40 years ago. So I think it really does come down to age.
The other thing that I noticed, and I should say we focused on age and all of that, but the information here is broken down in a lot of different ways. It's, levels of education based on geography. The other one that kind of leapt out at me, and I'll throw this to Chuck first, but I'd like everybody's thoughts on it, is that one of the things measured was confidence in public institutions. And the levels of confidence dropped from 2012 to 2016 in urban and rural areas, but actually seemed to climb in suburban areas across the board. And, it was in schools, in media, in government, and all of that. Suburbia seemed to be much more content with the way things were going than others. Do we have any idea what might have accounted for that? Chuck, I'll throw that your way.
This is one of those ones where, you can see the data and wonder what exactly is behind it, and you can have a lot of different answers to it. And I don't have any sort of magic answer to it. But I think it is important. It is interesting to see where those changes are and that geography does matter. Confidence in institutions, in the media, in public schools, for example. In rural Indiana, public schools are the community in many ways. And that's certainly in other areas as well. But
so eroding confidence there is
potentially,
is a much bigger problem.
And I think some of the challenges that, various areas are facing can be manifested in just overall confidence. Urban challenges and some of the rural challenges, economic, et cetera. And you can see, some of the moving data on this. And I think some of these are going to reflect some of the national trends. Confidence in media, I think, is certainly not an Indiana unique thing. Mm-hmm. And the other thing, too, that is an issue is what exactly is the media? You know, a lot of these things aren't necessarily defined for the individual. They come up with their idea. Well, maybe to me, media is Facebook. That's where I get my information. Maybe it's public radio. Maybe it's cable news.
We like those people.
Exactly.
Yeah, we like those people who like public radio.
So those are some other aspects to the data that I think can be a little more left to the interpretation as to, it is helpful, but it is limited in some respects.
Jeff, is this limited to Indiana? Because I saw that and I thought, okay. Hey, and admittedly, I make my living in media and all of that. So one of the reasons it leapt out at me is we've seen eroding numbers, obviously, in public confidence in media for quite a long time. That's a long-term trend. To see a part where, actually it's climbing. The confidence seems to be increasing. Leapt out
really
at me.
Rare.
That was, and what I was wondering then is also I saw with suburbia, by and large, Americans right now don't seem to be that happy with their government. They're often not very happy with their schools, and they're not happy with the folks who bring them the news and information. So seeing that and seeing, there is a significant part of this state that does seem to be actually more confident than it was 4 years ago, seemed to be an anomaly.
Right, right. Now, I think this is a national trend. I mean, you're right. This has been happening for years, and I think this is an outlier. It's a wonderful outlier to see that it is increasing somewhere, but it is an outlier.
I think a piece of this that's most notable from my point of view, that's the one sort of different change than the ones that we've just been discussing, has been the attitude about people in urban areas about schools.
Yeah.
Is a very noticeable decline. Mm-hmm. And no tremendous shock there, but one that at a time when suburban and rural people continue to have high levels of confidence, the people who live in and around large cities are losing their approval.
Yeah, those numbers, just to show, in urban areas, it's not like they were robust in 2012. Confidence in corporations was 64.2%, confidence in media was 63.1%, and confidence in public schools was 82.9% in 2012. By 2016, it says confidence in corporations had dropped down to 62.1%. Confidence in the media dropped to 55, so that was an 8-point slide in the space of 4 years. And confidence in public schools was a little more than a 5-point slide, down to 77.7. Don't worry, folks, there's not going to be a quiz on this afterward. I know, that's a lot of numbers to throw at it. But, you know, in the other areas in suburbia, all of those numbers are over 80%, I think, are pretty robust, if I glanced at it. And in rural areas, like, you know, the drop from confidence in public schools went from 94 to 93. So it's not that great. So can we take from this, then, that the real cause for concern is in urban areas, in terms of is there a crisis of confidence there? I'll start with Jeff on that one, but I'd like to hear everybody's thoughts.
I think there's too many confounding variables to say it's just urban area. I think there's potentially household income is a stronger correlation than geography in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if urban areas have lower income, if they have lower education attainment, stuff like that, that would drive the numbers down more than actually just geography itself.
Chuck.
Yeah, I think, again, these are, the more we can break down the data, the better, and hopefully give us some different tracks to analyze. And this was one of the areas that we looked at. But I think what Jeff was saying is probably right. There might be more overriding variables than maybe just geography in the particular results. Although I think that says something, though, that you know, those numbers are the numbers. And, you know, you can read into some of the other ones, and maybe if you overlay some of the other things as far as, you know, compare geography versus and including, you know, income and some other variables as well, maybe get a sharper picture of what it might be showing. But again, to me, and you know, the education aspect is so important, and confidence in public schools, you know, just looking at geographic, you know, the rural upwards to the 90s, you know, and now in the high 70s in urban areas. That's a big difference.
Mm-hmm. You can see the change in attitude about urban schools virtually every day in the news. The news just this week about the Muncie public schools have been losing students for a decade and now are a distress unit of government. In Gary, I noticed in the new school year, there are more children going to alternative schools than there are going to the Gary public schools. It's a literally shifting of attendance in a way that's incredibly dramatic and very, very financially and fiscally difficult to deal with.
And it strikes me that as we move to this conversation forward, we're coming up on a break here, that we probably ought to talk about, and we've got a couple of questions that you know, ask whether there are recommendations that come out of this, and whether I may take the liberty of reframing some of those as we do this, is what we see as the most alarming trends, the things that should be cause for concern. As Chief Justice Shepherd said, there's one we've identified with the schools that sounds like it's a paradigm shift in many in many ways. So that is what we will be talking about. We are talking about the Indiana Civic Health Index today on No Limits. My guests are retired Indiana Supreme Court Chief Justice Randall Shepard. He served as one of the chairpersons of the assessment. Indiana Bar Foundation Executive Director Chuck Dunlap. The Bar Foundation was a sponsor of the index. And Jeff Coates, Director of Research and Evaluation with the National Conference on Citizenship. If you want to join the conversation, you're going to have to do it electronically. You can send us an email or reach out to us via social media. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking about the 2000 Indiana Civic Health Index. It was released just in late October of 2017. It looks at voter participation, group participation, levels of confidence in institutions, and the ways we interact with each other, including how often we eat dinner with our families. My guests are retired Indiana Supreme Court Chief Justice Randall Shepard. He was one of the chairs of the assessment. Indiana Bar Foundation Executive Director Chuck Dunlap. The Bar Foundation was a sponsor of the index. And Jeff Coates, Director of Research and Evaluation with the National Conference on Citizenship. Got an email from a listener named Diana. If you want to join the conversation, you can reach out to us via Facebook at No Limits. WFYI, via Twitter at WFYI, or you can send us an email, as Diana has done, at nolimits@wfyi.org. Diana writes, thank you for all you do in increasing our awareness in various areas. Regarding the ICHI, another area in which too many individuals and families lack participation, is in the area of emergency preparedness. We see natural disasters in other areas and know they can happen, but often choose to avoid thinking of them happening to us. Therefore, we do not prepare, preferring to count on the first responders to rescue us all. There is a wealth of information on the web about how to prepare. I'm not talking about being a full-scale prepper, just doing basic, sensible things. There is the Community Emergency Response Team, that is a national program, who train for what they hope they never need. Information can be found on the web to see what program might be available in each county. Consider taking the training. The more resilient and self-sufficient each of us is, the stronger our entire state becomes. Jeff, are there any things that kind of measure that in the index?
Not in this index. I do agree with her wholeheartedly. I'm a former employee of Red Cross and worked in the disaster field for many years. I agree with her. There's no indicators that actually show the preparedness of the citizens. One thing that I do see is Indiana has been increasing the group membership over the last few years, and that is really important, not only for disaster preparedness, but any stimuli, anything that changes the status quo in a community. That's where you build a social fabric. That's where you build those informal networks to support you in times of need. And Indiana has been doing a very good job between 2011 to 2016 to increase the number of people that are members of different groups.
Now, did this measure, and in terms of the time frame we are looking at, obviously, if it was released in late October of 2007. Well, I guess it could. For lack of a better term, did this track at all with, the Trump effect? I mean, I've been in and around public life for way more years than I would care to acknowledge at times, and I don't think I've ever seen anything quite like this. I'm trying to use neutral terms here to describe it, but something in which a single figure and really kind of a single movement dominates so many different facets of our civic discourse. Are there indicators in there that track what that effect might have been? I'll stay with Jeff on that, but I'd like everybody's thoughts.
The current data, no, because this data was all gathered prior to the actual election, mm-hmm. except for the voting registration, of course. Mm-hmm. We should be getting new data at the end of maybe May of this year. That may actually show some of that. There may be an increase in attending public meetings or a decrease, mm-hmm. depending upon the Trump effect, and also things around like contacting and visiting public officials could be affected, and also, of course, the use of the internet to express the public opinion. I'm kind of have a hypothesis that's going to change dramatically from last year, but we'll have to wait and see.
Well, then let me reframe, and I'll throw this one to Chief Justice Shepard, because one of the things I always find fascinating, because it's an ongoing tension in our national history and therefore in the state's history too, is that ongoing tension between, individual liberty and community obligation. If you want to really oversimplify both the American Constitution and the state constitution, those are, negotiating acts between those two tensions. Mm-hmm. When you look at this as someone who had to sort of resolve negotiations like that for a long time, what picture emerges of you of the way we're sort of balancing that tension between the individual and the community?
I find some grounds for encouragement here. I've been thinking about the way people in Indiana treat each other. I had a conversation, I had lunch a few weeks ago with somebody who grew up in Florida, and I told him that on the way to work that morning, coming down I-65, I had noticed somebody who needed to get in. We were at an exit. He needed to get in. There wasn't quite room. Mm-hmm. Somebody noticed that and slowed down a little bit. That fellow got into line, and he waved at the guy who let him in, and the guy who let him in waved back. Mm-hmm. And he said, that doesn't happen in Florida.
No, or California.
Or a lot of places. It happens in Indiana all the time. It's just the way that total strangers sort of say thank you to each other for these little tiny things. And I think that carries over into Indiana's political attitudes. If you think about the race for governor or the last race for senator and compare those to compare the way the two candidates talked about each other on the stage. John Gregg and Eric Holcomb actually liked each other, mm-hmm. and they treated each other with tremendous respect. They didn't pull any punches necessarily, but they didn't use anything like the rhetoric that Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump used about each other face to face.
Yeah, although that race, I think, is sort of an outlier.
Well, I make that argument with the Senate race. Yeah. Think about how Evan Bayh in the race with now Senator Young. Sort of same approach. It's not universal, but I do think there is a difference in how Indiana behaves, and we ought to work at keeping it that way.
Do the results show that, Jeff? Are we an outlier in that regard, or are there other states, since I'm assuming you look at these figures nationally?
Yeah, no, you're pretty much right in the middle.
Okay.
This is a trend all over the country.
We've gotten a question via Facebook from a listener who says, does the index make specific recommendations for improving civic life? And if so, what are some of the recommendations? If not, could your panel please offer some of their own suggestions for improving things like voter turnout, volunteering rates, etc.? I'll start with Chuck on that one.
Sure. I think the index itself kind of stuck to the numbers for the most part, and is a little bit lighter on recommendations. Now, that being said, I think one of the things we've talked about is civic education and mm-hmm. stressing civic education. Those numbers, the correlations were very strong. And so just a couple of the things, and again, these are somewhat self-promoting. The Barr Foundation is very involved in civic education programs like We the People, mm-hmm. which is in middle school, elementary, and high schools around the state. We just had about 600 high school and middle school students in Indianapolis at the end of December to tell us all they knew about the Constitution after studying it for a semester. High school mock trial, another really very good and strong civic education program. You heard about what the courts are doing. And so those are some things, some concrete things that can happen. You know, and honestly, a lot of it is a volume thing. You know, if we can get more bandwidth, we can get more kids participating. The programs are proven to work. And fortunately in Indiana, Chief Justice mentioned the General Assembly. We're one of the very few states that actually gets funding for the We the People program from our General Assembly because they see, number one, the results and the need for it. So that's one area that's been a really successful public-private partnership with the bar, the courts, the judiciary, and the legislature to help support programs like that. So to me, that's one of the solid takeaways from here. There are some good things happening. From my perspective, let's focus on those and try to broaden and expand those. And civic education really, I think, is the heart and the core of a lot of that.
Yeah, I'll give you another example. Those are great examples of where nonprofits and public officers have put some of our tax dollars to work and private money as well. Another example, the Evansville school system has created a program aimed at people who are interested in law and social justice. You can go half a day to this program, get certificates in those kinds of topics, go back to your high school to make sure you know enough about algebra and biology to get a diploma. But that program has been growing steadily over about a six-year period. And they've started to produce people who go out in the world and work at making the place better. So that's something that certainly other school districts can do. This is there are places where charter schools, based on some of these ideas, have been started. This is an example where the public school board decided that that would be a valuable thing to offer students who might be willing at an early age to think about that kind of career.
Gotten an email from a listener named Jerry, who, and again, our email address is nolimits@wfyi.org. Jerry writes, confidence in government appears to be strongly connected to a degree of education and income level, but mitigated by brainwashing by politicians. Jerry, I'm going to take the liberty of reframing this a little bit as a question, because we have not talked, we've talked about the differences in degrees of education, we've talked about geography. I think Jeff alluded to the fact, what are the breakdowns here in regard to, you know, income, household income? Because there were, I thought, some significant disparities that arose from that. Jeff, I'll start with you on that one.
Yeah, that tends to be one of the stronger correlations that we see nationally in general, and when we do other state reports, is that family household income is strongly correlated with civic engagement. And I don't know the causality. There really isn't a causality there, but there is a relationship. You know, those that make higher, have a higher income, tend to be more civically engaged according to these indicators. I think there are probably other indicators that would show something different, something indicators that are that deal with more informal neighbor-to-neighbor stuff would probably show something different. But, you know, I can't speak about that. Just with this data, there is a strong correlation.
Well, I'd like to add that you don't have to get very far up on the income list before your level of confidence rises. So then the people in the middle income area have a better level of confidence. It isn't sort of the upper middle class alone. To repeat something we said 20 minutes ago, tremendous correlation between education and income. No real surprise that people who have more education have higher confidence. They also have higher economic opportunity. So I think I see those two as being almost the same.
So we're getting reasonably close to the end of the program here, and we've talked a lot about areas of concern. Probably, and we noted at the beginning of the program, overall the trends are upward. A couple of outliers there. I mean, the confidence in some areas and institutions such as media and schools and all of that seems to be slight declines in areas. What are the things, though, that we find the most encouraging about these numbers? I'm going to start with Jeff on that, but I want to hear everyone's thoughts.
The trend of just overall increasing civic engagement in Indiana is very positive. I love to see the increase in doing favors for neighbors. I think that is a strong indicator of the of social fabric, and Indiana has been increasing in that. Also, working with neighbors to fix or improve something in the community is something that I love to see. I really love those informal civic engagement practices, and Indiana has been increasing that over the years.
Jeff, before I move to it, I want to follow up on that a little bit. Are there other little areas in here that are kind of hidden indicators of improvement or growth that we don't necessarily spot? Because that's not a number. The voter registration one is one that would leap to people. Public confidence obviously leaps out. I'm not sure
right.
a lot of people would identify that.
As public confidence, yeah.
Well, as an obvious indicator of improvement.
Right. You know, and it's confidence in your community, what they're trying to get to. And if you have confidence in your community, you tend to have confidence in the future of your community. And those positive emotions, positive feelings, actually have been seen to show an increase in engagement by individuals. So that's why those questions are there.
Okay. Chuck, I'm going to give you about 30 seconds. I want to save room for this
sure.
Chief Justice to have the last word.
Sure. No, the another indicator that I think was sort of pretty significant increase was eat dinner with a member of the household frequently, which a lot of people might not, you know, sort of, well, how is that related to civic health? But we went from 17th in the nation to 3rd in the nation. So I guess we Hoosiers like to eat with family members, which is a good thing. And I think really a lot of that is, you know, and we talked about voting, you know, your parents' voting habits can mm-hmm. translate to the next generation. And just discussions, you know, all of that is a central time to meet and talk about a lot of different things. And so I think that's one indicator that's an interesting one. Talk about politics with friends and family went dramatically up from 48th to 18th. So those are the kind of things I think that maybe, you know, it's not a hard indicator like voting, but it's a very strong, and Jeff was saying, the social fabric. I think those are the kind of things that we can look to and hopefully provide opportunities to increase as well.
Chief Justice Shepherd, you've
yes,
got about 30 seconds.
Well, I'd add to the have dinner with family, and on one level it seems sort of a chuckle, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
But the notion of family fabric is about as basic a arrangement as this society has, and the fact that you and your kids are going to sit down and talk about all sorts of things at dinner on a regular basis is a good sign. The other one I'll mention just briefly is that we do rather well in the percentage of our population who actually give money to charitable causes every year. It's over half. It's been stable at that level, and that's a sign of people caring about what happens in the places where they live.
And that will have to be the last word. I'd like to thank my guest, retired Chief Justice Randall Shepherd, Chuck Dunlap of the Indiana Bar Foundation, and Jeff Coates from the National Conference on Citizenship. I'm John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive Media Coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical Producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And Board Engineer, Joe Hatcher. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.